I want to dive though straight into our guest for today here on World Football Daily, because it's one of our favourites joining us on the show today. He's a man who, with his words alone, would be able to tempt Irina Shayk away from Cristiano Ronaldo. That's right. It's the one, the very own Mr. Graham Hunter for all things Spanish football today. Graham, a pleasure to have you on board, mate.
Ollie, that was the secret that I said wasn't to go out on air. Remember when I said, but that's between us?
I apologise.
Thanks. Okay.
When you're not, of course, schmoozing with world-famous footballers' girlfriends, you are, of course, talking about all things Spanish football, Graham. And it was a very surprising weekend, in La Liga this week. A bit of a European hangover for Atletico and Barca, or is there more to it?
No, much more to it, I think, unless that hangover starts with the coach. And I think the surprise started long before the game. You have to pick Barcelona, first of all, because it was simple to say that when Barcelona travelled to the Basque country, they haven't won at either of the two main Basque venues for several years. It's 2007 since Barcelona won at the Anoeta. We've seen that at their very best this season, 10 days ago or 10 days prior to the match, they'd drawn 1-1, but couldn't eke out the victory. And therefore, I think it was patently clear that with Jarroa Arasati saying there's revenge in the air, we felt slighted, we felt belittled in the cup tie. It needed everything to be right for Football Club Barcelona. And I was at training on Friday and asked Cata Martina specifically what it was that he appreciated most, liked most of the previous run of games against Sevilla, where they won in the puddles, Vallecano, where they destroyed, okay, a weak team, but with real panache and incessant, real aggression. The win at City, the draw at the Anoeta, what was the best out of all of that, I asked him. And he said, look, playing with four in midfield, which means that he counts whether Iniesta or Cesc Lucas, if they play up front, he counts them as a fourth midfielder. It's given us control of the ball, control of the game. We've had defensive solidity. I've said all these things, and he felt that they'd been underappreciated. And the very next day, he goes out, abandons the four in midfield, drops Xavi and Cesc, goes to three strikers, Pedro, Messi, and Neymar. Neymar only just back for his first full game since injury, playing Song as pivot instead of Busquets, and Busquets playing up instead of Xavi. So when you talk about European hangover, maybe Martino had one, maybe Martino thought it's vital that we change almost everything after an away Champions League match. But Ollie, in the three previous Champions League matches, Celtic, Milan and Ajax, they've only changed a maximum of three players. And one occasion, no one changed one. It's just six. All the equilibrium went, all the momentum went. Real Sociedad outperformed them in every aspect, whether you think about tactically, whether you think about athletically, whether you think about cojones, the degree to which Real Sociedad utterly believed they would win. It was 15 attempts compared to 5. Barcelona dropped nearly 8% in possession compared to the last time they were at the Anoeta. Afterwards, Tata Martino said, I read it wrong beforehand. I was too slow to react. There was literally nothing positive to take out of the game except for the fact that nobody broke a leg. And while the players looked flat, while the players who were on the pitch as an 11 looked good enough to be much more competitive than they turned out to be against Real Sociedad, there has to be a solid degree of blame in applied to Tata Martino's thinking, his analysis and his reactions.
Graham, a number of people are suggesting that Tata actually almost tried to throw in this formation with Song, Busquets, Iniesta, and then Pedro, Neymar and Messi up front as a slight curveball to almost take Sociedad by surprise. Do you think that was his thinking going into it, that he wanted to catch them off guard, show them something new that we hadn't seen before recently with Barca in recent weeks?
Look, I don't think so at all. I go the other way. This was them returning to 4-3-3. This is the template of the great years at Barcelona. And it's what all these homebred players, not the ones who've been signed, but it's what all the homebred players have been taught to play throughout their lives at La Masia, growing up in Football Base. It's what every club would predominantly expect Barcelona to play. What it's taught us is that whether the three in the middle are Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets, or Iniesta, Song, Busquets, it almost doesn't matter how you prime it. Barcelona no longer have the intensity of pressing nor the athleticism to play the brand of football that made them successful if the formation is 4-3-3. It is the case at the moment, for whatever reasons, whether it's physical decline, whether it's a lack of appetite, whether it's lack of intensity in training, whether it's the fact that some of the players have simply aged and passed up the ability to play this extremely demanding system at high tempo. Whatever it is, the emblematic 4-3-3 formation is now something that Barcelona find extremely difficult to apply away from home against a physical, quick, tall, talented, ambitious team. And I think that's a deeply worrying factor for the board, for the manager, and for the players. And it leads you to understand that either there needs to be an adaptation and a different way of playing, or a change in the personnel. And that's something that can only happen at the end of the season. So all Tata Martino said was that he wanted to go back to three forwards, that he wanted to press high, that he wanted to win the game through attacking power rather than midfield domination. And as such, he's somebody who I appreciate and think more highly of than the majority of the Catalan media. But that doesn't stop me from saying that, in tactical terms, he had an extraordinarily bad 24 hours.
Is a lot of that Tata's fault? The reasons that you mentioned for the possible decline of why they can't play this 4-3-3 all very much seem to be on the players' heads in terms of motivation, in terms of physical decline. I mean, Tata, we used to say, came in as a man who to play the Barca style rather than coming in and disrupting the Barca style. Then he tries to play it and it doesn't work for whatever reason. So does Tata need to maybe just be more of his own man, if you will, and put more of his own staple on this team and say the 4-3-3 doesn't work, we can't play it anymore, we're not going to revert back to that?
That's a very point, you know, because in the previous games he'd made a habit of making sure that whether they lined up and looked like 4-3-3, if you wanted to count Iniesta as a left winger, or if you wanted to count Cesc as a third forward, effectively the most fluent and commanding football Barcelona have played all season is when they've got four midfielders, even if one of them appears to be listed as a striker. Mm. Now, that means that for some time, Martino has been his own man. He's done something which he's touched something which was sacrosanct, Dolly. You know, 4-3-3, I think all grown-up modern football thinkers accept that a formation is just a base and that it will be fluid during the game, depending on the needs of the game. But under Guardiola, it wasn't. It was strict. He is still talking about Bayern Munich, about being undersatisfied with where Bayern Munich are, because he wants more strict positional play. Now, that means when you have, whether he's playing a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3, he wants that to be an absolute formation. He wants the players to obey rules as if it were NFL set plays. Mm. And he wants the ball to do all the work. Now, I use the comparison with him at Bayern Munich because he was exactly the same here. 4-3-3 was a strict formation. It was pure. The wingers were the wide men. Sure, the wing-backs could overlap. And yes, you could see Abidal or Puyol at right-back or Dani Alves at right-back overlapping a winger. But the number of times you saw Guardiola out on the touchline flapping his wings like a condor, saying to the wide men, you're not stretching the pitch enough, get wider. That doesn't happen anymore. It's just an irrelevance now. Under Tata Martino, to take your point, he had said we need four men in midfield. And for large chunks of the previous 4-5 games when Barcelona were playing, well, they were playing 4-4-2. And there was a time when there would have been howls about that, and it would have been almost unthinkable, not allowed, but it has been. So the point, to go back to your question, was that he'd established his own territory. He said, this is the way we need to proceed. And then he ripped it up. And I think that we live in a world where, to take your point again, some surprises, some experimentation can win you matches. But you must accept that if you've found a formula where you know you're drawing the most from the resources you've got, and then you change it, you need to have a damn good idea why. You need to. You remember what Pep Guardiola used to say before games here, that he would sit down in a darkened room in the camp now, watching the tapes that his scouts had put together, and he'd watch them hour after hour after hour, and then suddenly a light bulb would go on, not in the dark room, but in his head, and he would say, I know now, I know how we're going to beat this team. Now, I think Tata Martino, by comparison, took a punt. He didn't have a light bulb. Mm. He had a little lighter going off and on in a wind. And there wasn't enough light. It wasn't enough clarity. And he got it stone wrong. That doesn't make him a dud. That doesn't make me take away what I was praising him for in the previous months, because he's inherited a difficult situation. But it was short and simple, like a player missing a penalty. You say you train all the time. It was a simple spot kick, or like a player not beating the first man at a corner kick. You say, how is it that after all your work and all your practice, you can get something that simple that wrong? And that's what he did.
Let's move away from Barca now, Graham, and have a look at Los Blancos, because they're the real team that profited from the slip-ups from Atletico and from Barca this weekend. They go to the top of the table, 3 points clear Real Madrid. Incredible to think that they were, you know, 5 points off the pace back in December time off the top two. Now 3 points ahead, but people still quite unsatisfied, what I'm hearing from with Gareth Bale's performances, despite the wonder goal on the weekend, despite the fact he is scoring and creating goals in that Real Madrid side. Is it overly critical on Bale, or is there a real point to the criticism?
Well, I'd like to know who, and I'd like to know what they're saying. Now, that's not because I'm going to get their addresses and go around and duff them up. But before I launch into one of my typical knuckle-duster attacks, I need to be clear about what these critics are saying, because I'm aware that there are some people with a different point of view to mine. But I claim, if not superiority of knowledge, experience tells me that if you simply start and you ask a British player to come out of his comfort zone at a young age, to play not only in Spain, to have to learn Spanish, but to move to a Real Madrid side where there were convulsions the previous season, a Real Madrid side, or a Real Madrid club, which chewed up and spat out Jose Mourinho. Think about that. Mm. The situation at Madrid was too much for Mourinho in his last year. Now, he had total control, he had vast experience, he is a very, very talented man, and he couldn't cope. Now, Bale's a footballer, he's not a manager, there is a difference. But Bale is also a young man who struggled equally at Tottenham when he first went there, needed to be bled into the situation, needed to grow in confidence. He's gone to Real Madrid against all of this as a background. Furthermore, he's gone half fit. He's been consistently injured. During his time there, there have been three or four changes of formation, not first 11. And yet, what do we have? He's very nearly contributed to, let's call it, a round total of 20 goals in all competitions through assists and goals. He's at or around that figure. This is February. Real Madrid are in the cup final. They're now clear at the top. Every time he's come back from people doubting him or him being injured, he's produced, I mean, literally exceptional goals. We've already seen the kind of goals that you might, even the greatest footballer, might accumulate across two or three seasons. For my money, we've seen him creating a number of different goal assists off both feet. He's predominantly very left-footed, yet some of his assists have come off his right foot. In fact, I think his first one did, his most recent one did. The goal that he scored at the week against Elche, at the weekend against Elche, helped seal the game, will never be forgotten. In context of all that, given that I'm neither his brother nor a part of his fan club nor his PR man, it's patently clear that anybody who understands Bale's football will say that there are more complete performances to come. He will become a team leader. He will participate more in build-up. You'll get more than 60, 65 minutes out of him in a game. These things are for sure. But for heaven's sake, given where he's come to, where he's come from, the handicaps he carries, which were the injuries, the fact that Real Madrid by no means were a made side when he arrived there, and moreover the fact that he carries this horrendous price tag of being the most expensive footballer ever, because he is, no matter what Real Madrid pretend in order to keep Cristiano Ronaldo happy. These things are handicaps. They're weights upon your shoulders. And yet, what I say is his achievements are exceptional, and he is a player that will make the difference between Real Madrid winning huge games and maybe winning finals or not. And as such, the report card right now reads, may yet provide much more. Right now, his mark is excellent.
Graham, I'm very pleased to hear you say that, because critics are always going to criticise rather than critique, I think, a lot of the time. And this weekend, I thought Bale played extremely well against Elche. He scored that wonderful goal, as you said. And it seemed quite like an important result for Madrid, A, going into a Champions League week, but B, also the fact that the three scorers were Illarramendi, Isco and Gareth Bale, all players that have got a lot of pressure on them in this first season at Los Blancos.
Well, that's true, and I think that, you know, I like the way you pointed out the spread of scorers, because these were, you know, this was the third of three games when Ronaldo was banned. Now, the ban seems to me to have been excessive. The fact that they didn't find out until the morning of the game whether he could or couldn't play in that third game. While he's been away, what if they scored something like 4-3-3? They've scored 10 goals while he's been away in three games. That's pretty exceptional. They've won every single point. But realistically, both Carlo Ancelotti, the players, the media and the fans, the Madrid media, would certainly want to see more convincing, more consistent football than we did against Elche. And at times during the season, Real Madrid have shown that. But I think that to link to what we were first talking about, it's extraordinary that that 4-3-3 formation, which was an absolute touchstone part of Barcelona's DNA, is a formation which Real Madrid have opted for, or Carlo Ancelotti has opted for. It's a formation that many Real Madrid 11s of recent years wouldn't have been able to handle. Three in midfield rather than four would have been insufficient. And Ancelotti's ripped up the 4-2-3-1, allowed there to be tremendous competition up front between Bale, Ronaldo, Jesse, and now to a lesser extent, Morata. But he's made the midfield function really, really well. Xabi Alonso is now no longer the only man who makes Real Madrid midfield tick. It was the case, and has been the case for years, that if Alonso's injured or under form, Real Madrid will be beaten, or at least they will look extremely vulnerable. That's no longer the case, because he's reinvented Di Maria. He's managed to bring through Illarramendi, in that although the player is in the same position as he was at Real Sociedad, he's much, much more mobile, much more confident. He understands the rules. He understands the work rate much more. Modric has been towering, literally towering, and all the credit for that goes to Ancelotti. Modric has matured. He's enjoyed his football. He's taken responsibility as well as being asked to take it. And therefore, there are success stories all over the squad, all over the pitch. And I think that to a great degree, we have to take our hats off to Ancelotti and say that, as opposed to Martino, you can deconstruct what's been happening over the last 2 months at Real Madrid and hand a great deal of credit for understanding of his squad and understanding of how best to play to the Italian manager.
Graham, ever the expert in Spanish football wisdom, and I apologise for taking up so much of your time today, mate, but it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you about the two top sides in Spanish football, although let's not leave Atletico Madrid behind here as well and keep them in that top three as well. It keeps things interesting, mate. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on Monday show, man, and we look forward to catching up with you very soon indeed, man, and let's hope that success for Real Madrid continues into the game against Schalke this week.
Really enjoyed the chat. Enjoy your Spanish football.
Cheers, Graham. Thanks a lot, mate. Big thanks to Graham Hunter there, taking us through some of the La Liga stories. And, of course, the big story from La Liga is Real Madrid now.